And you should stop me at any time if it's not clear what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. Maybe we should start by you telling me where and when you were born and how you came to Seattle.
Well, I was born September 13th, 1900, in the state of Washington, up in Bellingham, Washington, which is up about 100 miles north of Seattle. I moved to Burlington, Skagit County when I was about 6 months old, and I completed school there, and then I came down to university in 1918.
So you came down to come to the university?
Yes.
Your folks stayed in up north?
No, I moved down before I got down here. My father done a business up there, he sold his store and came on down. I wanted to finish high school up there, and so I stayed on and finished high school up there, and then came down.
Your father was a businessman then?
Yes, he ran a general store.
And did your mother work outside of home, or
no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 10 children, you didn't have a
So you came down to go to college. Did you go through the university here?
Yes, yeah. The academic courses and law school.
And law school here at the
university. Right.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when you were growing up, was politics discussed in your family at all?
Oh, very much, yeah. Very alert to those things, my father particularly, and children too, but he would lead the discussion. He was widely interested in everything.
Let me make sure that this is worthwhile for us. Would you remember what the tone of that politics was? Was it Democrat, Republican, or Labor, Capital, or?
Well, I would say this, that he was certainly a Republican, and I would say quite conservative.
A very conservative Republican?
Yes. Yeah.
Were questions of Labor discussed in politics? When you think of political discussions in those days, what were they on?
Well, on local issues, on national issues. Just to illustrate, both my mother and father were very strong brothers. So they took part in the campaigns to do away with saloons and so on and so forth, and considerable sacrifice. I certainly loved them for it. I never been expected to sit in faith, but nevertheless, they were very sincere. It cost my father a lot of money because saloon keepers wouldn't come into their store. He was trying to put them out of business.
So when he came down to Seattle, did he stay in business here?
No, he retired. He retired around there.
Do you remember when he came down, maybe hard to get out of the home, and what papers they generally read?
I believe, and I think I'm correct, that we took both the Seattle Post and Publisher and the Seattle Times.
And then when you were in the university, were you staying with them?
Yes.
With them?
Yes.
So you read what they read?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, yes, I have newspaper writers, so I didn't even get my hands on that.
You don't remember the Union Records from those
days? Oh, yeah. You bet I do, yeah.
Is that something that you read regularly, or?
No. Irregularly, I would say, but it was a pretty lively edited paper, and again, there's a viewpoint that I like to know about, and so that's it. It was very, very, that was a very strong question here that's a matter of labor at that time, and the Union Records was certainly right in the forefront of that, and many people thought it was communist dominated. Whether it was or not, I don't know. It was very left wing, oh yeah, no question about it. And it had some, at that time some ties with the labor movement, I mean the union, but which they lost something, and that's pretty well out of business. But, so that was about the end of it, and but no, that's one thing, great thing. I grew up in a family where everybody was interested and argumentative, discussed all questions, all things
for a lawyer.
Well, yes, and also you were part of the world, and so part of society.
So, at the time the general studies started, were you in the university then?
When did you say it started? What time?
February 1919.
February 1919. Yes. So, I started the university, I would say, in January of 1919. Yeah, I missed the first quarter because I was up working up the last one, officially. And I came back. After being up there, I guess maybe 4 months, 5 months. And then I just started in the second quarter.
What kind of work were you doing up in the fisheries?
Well, I was a power driver man. Working on a power driver, driving fish traps, and then also lifting the traps, that means lifting our fear and net, and the fish were in the net, and so you lift the net up and rail the fish out into the sky. Very interesting picture. That was a wonderful experience.
Do you remember why the strike was called?
Why it was called?
Or who called it?
No, the individual I can't think of right now, who called that truck. And I'm sure there must have been one single individual who instigated the rule here, that's the leader, you know. And who it was, I just can't remember. The name is just they brought the town to a halt for 2 days, all right.
Do you remember beforehand, do you remember between the time when it became clear that there was going to be a strike and the time it actually started, do you remember people talking about it at all? Do you remember what people expected of it?
Well, I don't think that most people figured it would come off. That's what the size of it. In nature, it's quite revolutionary. And so I think that that degree what I've been talking about, but I think that they just thought it right off somewhere. But, I'm sure that was the situation.
When you say revolutionary, did people consider it beforehand as a large strike or as a possible revolution, or did they see it as a radical break with anything beforehand?
Well, I would say this, but that was the as I remember it, the whole focus of the strike was the matter of disruption and that the revolution in Russia had not been too strong. Mrs. Strong at that time, she was here, and she was revolutionary. And that's one name that comes to me right now. I remember her. And so, that was it. And people were very fearful that that's what might take place. They didn't know how far it would go, because it's not here. I didn't know how much further it goes. And what they do is, you know, you shut down the whole town. And if it's effective, well, you can't get milk, you can use a telephone, and so you're helpless as an individual.
And what was it actually like once it started?
Well, it was, you know, we didn't have any newspapers, and as a consequence, why a lot of rumors, you know, going out sort of thing. But of course, Ole Hansen, who was a flamboyant individual at that time, he come out, you know, and just not going to have a revolution here, and don't be afraid, because this thing will be stamped out. That was his attitude, and he was very positive on it, too, and if he had had any other qualities, he'd have been quite a hero, but he wasn't too sound. That's the way, but people worried, no question about it. When they get together and get in the front, they can bring to knees what they can do if they get this thing. Just we've seen that in France many times, so maybe that's it takes very vigorous training, and I think, though, that they learn one thing, that it's very dangerous for them to call them strikes. Yeah, that type of general strike. I just can't continue in my lifetime really seeing another one, because I miss it. Although it's probably taken to me, because France has them, and they're usually short strikes, maybe one day, 2 days, something like that, but they're not for any of their demonstrations, even though they're coming up. And Canada, I wouldn't call it a general strike up there, but somewhat the same order, another three. Maybe you won't get any mail for 6 weeks, you know, they just, that sort of thing. But, and then, I would say that, especially at that time, the leadership union that we've been having,
at the time, how did you feel about it as a student?
Well, I think that I can't remember the fact that I was trained to become part of the establishment. And so my thinking went along with the establishment.
Did you see it as a danger to the city, or how seriously did you take it at the time? Once it actually happened and it closed the down, did you think it was a threat to the city?
Yes, oh yes, no question about it, yes, exactly. But no one knew how far it would go. It wasn't like spread to other places. We nationally didn't know.
Mm-hmm. That was actually a question, whether it might spread and become...
Yes, that's not right. Because, we weren't too far away from the Russian Revolution, and I'd like to put in the other people who were strong in that, and who were, I would call them revolutionaries, as I would call Mrs. Strong. I had a lot of respect for her in some ways, but when you know a person, what their attitude is, it's revolutionary. I always say, on one side of my eye, I'm on the other. But she was no rummy. She was a smart woman.
Did you know her personally? Did you come into contact with
her? Well, I met her, let's put it that way, and no, I did not really, but I followed her career, because she was an interesting personality, and she was a good writer, really good writer. And she did quite a bit of writing for the Union Record.
Do you remember, did most of your friends and family feel the same way about the strike that you did, that it was dangerous?
Yes, I would say so.
Do you remember if there was any violence that you were aware of during the strike?
If there was, it was extremely minor. And I think it was no more like a matter of week and see. And I don't think they call out the National Guard, but Chief of Police threatened to, and he said that order will be maintained, and so he was right on top. And then Gardens, I think it only lasted less than a week. I think I was going to say 4 days.
And you say the National Guard wasn't here, or the Army, or or anything like that?
No, but I think that they had them on standby. That's my opinion.
And do you remember the Strikers dining halls they set up? There were two them?
No, I don't remember that. I don't think it got very far because it didn't last long.
Do you know why it ended? Or why did people feel it ended at the time?
Well, I think this is that they saw it didn't catch on what was going in the tourism locally. And they pulled it. Well, they say, you know, that calmer heads prevailed, and there was a certain rash of emotion when they called it. And then they were working on, say, where do we go from here? And you always have to remember, that's that time. They weren't getting any benefits, they weren't getting food back, all that sort of thing. And the woman at home, she said, well, now wait, you're not working. I don't know any lot of the issues there, but remember, we got four kids here, and they have to be fed, and their grocery bills due, and they're not going to give us any more credit. So you better think about going back to work. And the pressure on the individual is terrific. But she's looking at it in a very pragmatic way. And that's true, because at that time, very initially, you wouldn't get any spec benefits to not make it. You'd have to take your family down to a strike headquarters, you know, and feed them there. So the pressure from that standpoint. And thing of that sort, right away, started immediately. Well, what were their objectives? I'm just trying to think now. And I think primarily that they were, their objectives were revolutionary. Because I just can't think of the specific objectives apart from that. And what they said was, your objectives. Have you had a chance to look at the union record as to what they say about that? It's amazing that they could con all these labor unions and going on. But it was a revolution. There's all those things. That war was just over, that situation in Russia. And there was a lot of unrest.
Who were the sorts of people that were leading? Not the names, but was it, I mean, was the strike under the leadership of the unions or the IWW? Or
I would say under the IWW, they were the ones who were leading it. And for some of these unions, may very well have been dominated by them. The illustration of certain times where the newspaper union was absolutely coming to dominate.
In the CR strike? Time.
Yeah, and other times too. I had a political writer up at the CI, a friend of mine. He was an obsession with him, fighting the communists. He did. He was a great personal sacrifice too, because if you've been following this labor movement very much, you know, what they do is get in a meeting there, and they just prolong them. They just prolong them. You get tired, you go home. Finally, they have their hardliners there, and they put it through the program after everybody else has gone home. And he fought like a devil right down the line. He looked confused. So that thing can occur, and probably did at that time. But, now, I am sure that the revolutionaries undoubtedly control the shipyards. And of course they were going through turmoil because they weren't going to go very long. They were going to believe what they had there, but they knew that the end, and so where do we go from there? So that was a fertile field, and they were I would say always that way. And as I remember, I don't think the longshoremen union was really very active at that time. Later, the Harry Bridges came along. As a matter of fact, I think it was about 1931 when Harry took over in the longshoremen union. And I saw those guys. Those were, they're tough fighters, you know. You get a captain and get mixed up with them, you're in a fight. Violence doesn't, I mean, it's a way of life for them, you know, it tends to. Although I would say for Harry, if he settled that thing on the waterfront here, we haven't had any trouble for years. Mm-hmm. He's done a good job for them, too. Mm-hmm. The thing about Harry is he recognized that he got to take the power of the mechanical means of loading and unloading ships. See down here all these containers. You know, about 4/5 of that cargo comes in these containers. Well, what do? They got compensation for that because it doesn't employ them then, on a 6-hour day. And they gave them a high rate if they would handle these containers. For a while, they wouldn't handle them. And so then they started handling them and all that. Shipyard unions were involved. And that may have been the tip-off too, because I remember they went on strike for higher pay, and they were in a bad way because you could see the end on that shipyard business. There must have been 40,000 or 50,000 people employed in those shipyards at that time. And so I wouldn't be surprised if that may have been the thing that tipped it, you know.
Was the renewal worth it? Was the general strike worth it for labor? How did you feel about labor with it?
No, it did them a lot of damage.
Yeah. In what way?
Well, number one, that they would cause inconvenience and distress to a great many people who had no part in it at all, one way or the other. The ordinary average person. He went down, he couldn't get milk at the store. He couldn't ride the streetcar, that sort of thing. And so they felt that they were taking advantage of the general public. And no, I would say they lost a lot of ground from that standpoint. And then it became quite apparent that it was a revolutionary movement. And generally speaking, at almost any particular time, the majority of the people were not in favor of the revolution. And simply because they like the status quo, really what it amounts to. They want, at least they wanted an orderly way. So I would say that when it became apparent that was led by and their objectives were along that line, why that they lost a lot of ground.
You said a little earlier that subsequently the unions have been more conservative, or.
Since that time.
Was that an
outgrowth
of the strike in any way?
I think so, yes. I think that the unions and also the international unions got a much firmer grasp on the local unions and that sort of thing. And so as a consequence, they could, if they got on a line, they could bring them back. And, just trying to think what we had here. One of the prominent unions was in trusteeship for a long period of time. And the national just takes it over, appoints the trustee to run the local union. And so, yes, I would say that certainly not labor lost, but let's say the revolutionary movement, I have to distinguish. I'm sure that labor as a whole was not the revolution.
Did strike affect your life or the life of the city in any concrete way, do you think?
Well, I have to remember back, but I think that it did, as I haven't read all the street cars again. And whether I was downtown or not, I can't remember, but if I was, you probably would have to hunt around and find some place to eat. It includes up all of us. And I don't think you had any milk deliveries. And of course, that time you get the groceries delivered.
Does that affect your opinions about labor? Did you say it changed your mind about anything that was going on?
Except that the only thing is this. Well, I don't know if it changed your mind, but at least it maybe solidified your mind in that it was too much power in the hands of certain individuals who could close the whole thing down for their own objectives. That solidified that thought.
You mentioned Ole Hansen a while ago. You remember he was mayor during the strike. What do you remember about Hansen?
As I say, he's a flamboyant individual. And I don't think that I don't want to say no one, but generally speaking, people didn't regard him as he was very sound. I believe shortly thereafter, I think he ran for the United States Senate. He found him. He ignored him. And then he went down one of the real estate vendors. Excuse me one second now. Then he went down one of the real estate vendors. You know what? Was it Santa Barbara? Or was it town?
San Clemente.
San Clemente, that's it, yeah. San Clemente, yeah. He went down there. And he really never came back here at all. No, he wasn't. He thought the reason of breaking this strike that he was going to become the local hero, but his weak points showed through, you know.
Did he in fact break the strike?
Well, that's a good question, but I would say this. You have to give him some credit. He took a very firm position on it and said that law and order would be maintained, and so the thing petered out, and I think about 5 days, I know less than a week, and it petered out. You've got to give them credit, all right, to that extent, and I think that the general public did, but they wouldn't give them credit by going to the polls and voting for him or anything else.
How about Anna Louise Strong? You've mentioned her once or twice.
Yeah.
Was your contact with her through reading her column in the Union Record or reading books that she wrote later?
Both, yes. And she wrote for the Union Record. And I may have been at meetings when she came to speak. I don't want to say for sure it's certain about that. But, she was a very familiar church as far as I was. And she was a fine woman, quite. She was one that coincided with mine, but she didn't expound them. She was dedicated to her views, no question about that. And she went over in Russia. She stayed over there for about a period of time. And I vaguely think that she more or less broke for them when they broke for the Chinese. I believe that's good. She had kind of after Chinese became revolutionary, that she was sympathetic to the Chinese viewpoint. I think that was it.
How about Jimmy Duncan? Do you remember him?
Oh, yes. Yeah, Jimmy Duncan, yeah.
What do you remember about him?
Well, in the first place, I think I'm right in this. He was elected to the city council at one time. And whether he was a revolutionary or not, I don't know, but he was very strong views, and he was a small Scotsman, and a fiery sort of a fellow. And but I think that he wasn't like a member. I don't think he was a dominating character.
Was he connected with the strike?
I want to say yes, but I just can't put my finger on it that he had a particular. I would say this, and this just in place of mine, that he didn't control the strike movement. He may very well have been a partner, but he didn't control it.
Did you know at that time any people in the IWW were going to school around the time of the strike?
Oh, yes, you bet, yeah. The IWWs were kind of up in the woods. Actually, I saw one of them, one of the most horrifying things I've ever seen, being tarred and feathered. Nothing I think was degrading to human dignity as that. This was a small town of Burlington that I was living in. And because there are mills around there, that sort of thing. They were trying to organize the mill workers, and had a following. Yes, I came in contact with the movement. I'll put it that way. You said, well, did you personally know members of the IWW? It would be very difficult for me to say that I did. I knew of them, but these days, I probably would. That's what I'm talking about. Look at you, sorry.
But at that time, you didn't have, say, acquaintances or friends who you knew in the IWW. Did you go over and ask them what was the latest?
No, that is absolutely correct, because the very nature of the thing that I say, we were part of the establishment. And most of the IWWs were single men. They were what we call vindicators. They carried blankets on their backs. That time, if you went to work in the woods, you had to carry your own blankets in there. I know, because I went up there and worked in the woods.
You did?
Oh, yes. Yeah. I was 76. I was like, what did you do? Get fired regularly, too, because I tried to hold down a man's job.
How did that happen, that you were doing that work? Was that,
it's like $3, you know. I would come along and maybe go up to work once or sometime, went up there, and this was Christmas vacation. That's when you put in maybe 10 days, 2 weeks or something. And another time, I went up and took a week out of school a couple of days early and went up and worked on it over Thanksgiving.
How did folks feel when you did stuff like that? Did they think that was all right?
Well, yes. Oh, yes. They, from that standpoint, they might have worried about it. I wouldn't know if they did. But on the other hand, you can't worry about 10 kids. You know, they're going in every direction. And, but it was a tremendous experience. I had no trouble getting a job, but I had some trouble holding it. I tell most people I've been fired off more jobs than you've ever had. Simply because I get it over my head.
Well, I'd like to ask you, John, I'd like to ask you now a couple questions about other things in the strike, also, say, attitudes, and maybe some of the jobs that you have had since then or around that time. At
that time, well, number one, I was went out as a packer in shingle mills, packing shingles, and I usually have been over my head there, too. There were shingle mills and the town we lived in, and so I could pack the way they measured it, I could probably pack 25,000 a day. And I thought I was better than I was and take a job that was 40,000, you see. And so I'd get a swamp there. About that time, they'd point the finger at me and fire me.
This when you were a kid?
Oh, yeah, I was probably 15, 16, you know. And then I worked up there in the farms up in Skagit County. Oats, shocking oats. And putting up hay and that sort of thing, and did that, and worked on the railroad, the Northern Railroad, and the Gandhi Dancers. You know what a Gandhi Dancer is?
No, I don't.
Well, you know, when you're putting the ties in, You have to put it down so you get down the gravel to fit solid. So you put the shovel down and keep working that shovel. See, that's why they call you a Gandhi dancer, because you're going like that. So I did that, and you know, I was getting $1.65 a day, a 10-hour day. And they finally fired me to give a married man a job. What? Get a loaf of bread then for 5 cents. So it's all relevant, you know. I learned that very well. Well, and then several times I worked in the log cabin, then a little bit later, I worked in the fisheries, went up to Alaska, and worked in the fisheries up there, which was a great experience. And I worked on the sound here in the fisheries. Then, when I was going to law school, I worked in a cigar store here, and not really had any experience doing it, because up on Pike Street there, and all the pimps in there, you know, and gamblers and bootleggers and all that.
This is still the days when that district was the real rough district?
No, this is up on pretty good street up there. But it just so happened that place became sort of a hangout for those people. They didn't give them too much time, but they would come in there. It's like the bootleggers, they come in there. We'd take orders from the bootleggers there. I thought there must be an easier way, so then I got a job selling old cigarettes and candy to the canteens in the various fraternity houses. And that only took me maybe an hour a week, and they produced their money at it. And so that was, I'd say that was an easier way, particularly when I was going to law school. And that was about it, because my folks, I could furnish a board and room, but they couldn't finance me anything beyond that. I had to get out and earn it.
So this was to pay for tuition and things?
Oh, that's right, yeah, clothes and all that. When I was up in Alaska, and one day they came out and said, come on, and they went inside at the candy. So for just a few days, I went in there and they put me in a fertilizer.
Oh,
the smell was something off. You get that fish oil in your skin, you couldn't get anything. It doesn't bear, you couldn't get. I couldn't find anybody to bunk with except a crazy man. And so I made up my mind, well, by God, you know, if I didn't stay on that job, the season was pretty well advanced, I couldn't get another job, I wouldn't be able to go to school. So I said, well, I'm going to stick to 4th of July. If I don't get out here before 4th of July, win, lose, or draw, I'm going to quit. But by gosh, the 1st of July, they told me that after the 4th, I could go outside again. Instead of that. So anyway.
And then, so you became a lawyer in the mid or late 20s?
I was admitted to the bar in 1924. Maybe started out in practicing, and been practicing ever since. So I practiced for 53, 64 years. Enjoyed every day. What are you going to do when you get through?
Well, where you
are? Public. Well, I have a tendency to pick up cards. But the interesting thing is this, whether it's good or bad, I don't know, but you start practicing law, you get so busy, you don't have an opportunity to take up cards or to carry them out. That's the thing. Now, maybe that's bad, I don't know, but anyway, that's the way it is. And there's no question about it, given this type of practice, whether it's a corporate practice, you become part of the establishment. There's no doubt about it. You might as well make up your mind to it. That's what you are, you know. So, one of our fellows had exactly the same name as a chap who was in the labor movement and who called a strike on Seattle First National Bank, the big bank. Some people said, hey, what's your man Gates doing? He says, over there in that strike deal. He says, God, he's on that side. He says, we want somebody on our side. Kind of interesting to see how it reacts. So, as a consequence, why
you have to watch yourself, stuff, and you have to remember that society you're on. You see, that's the thing. That's what buys your bread and butter. And the other fellows, the fellows who go into politics, that's about the size of it. Only one fellow I knew who really had a good corporate practice who maintained his independence was a fellow named Ben Kaiser over in Spokane. And he was sharper than what he was. But Ben was, he was ultra-liberal. He never deviated from it either. Nobody could make him. But in spite of that, he was very successful. It's an interesting thing. But I would guess that the fellow who is issues-oriented, probably if he will wind up in politics or in government service, on the side, that's been my feeling about it. And it's an interesting thing to look back and say, well, what would I have, what else would I have gone into, and what would I have done? Well, one thing I'd like to have done was to go to sea. I'd been around on small boats and that sort of thing, and I had a, what they call at that time, a lifeboat certificate, which means that you're an ordinary seaman. But I went down and investigated, and my gosh, the captain of this 18,000-ton ship that ran out, passenger ship that ran out of here over the Orient, he was getting $300 a month. Yeah, it's sad. And he said, that's the top after years, and there's no future in it. So I abandoned that. You know. He had a nautical school out here. You can go to that. So it was an interesting thing. You look to see what you might have gone into. And I always liked journalism, too. But again, monetary standpoint. There's no future in that either. Pay is a little bit better now. I noticed these new contracts. Here, I went to the Washington Post. But I figured out that top reporters get about $18,000 a year, and you know, they struggled quite a while to get up to that point too. So that was an interesting thing, and but I always liked that newspaper work. I had times I've written up a lot of press releases and that sort of thing, and politics and this, that, and the other thing. And I was a stringer for papers at one time, so had a little experience. I liked it all. No question about it. That's exciting stuff. And a lot of my friends were in newspaper then. Well, do you think of anything more?
Have some more. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you? Do you consider yourself a politically active person?
No, I've been very active.
You have.
Yeah. But yeah, extremely active. National politics. But it takes so much energy, and I just don't have that much energy anymore.
Were you back in the days of the strike a politically active person?
No, I would say not. When I moved down here, I didn't have a chance to get oriented. But very shortly thereafter, though, I became active. Yes.
Not as a result of the strike.
No relationship at all.
What sorts of organizations do you belong to?
Well, I belong to local ones, clubs like community clubs, that sort of thing. I belong to Republican Club, I've been my Republican Club, and I was part of the Young Republican Club in 1942, which is the dominating Republican Club here, and then I took active part in the selection of delegates to the National Convention, the Republican side. That more fun to shake a stick at, and tremendously interesting. Oh God, the energy it takes, you know. I thought about it this last time, and I just didn't have the energy.
Has there been a political leader in recent years that you felt spoke for you?
No. No, I would say that, no, Ford, I know what his limitations are, and a lot of things that he did, why I like. And as a matter of fact, there's some things about Carter that I like. I think that both of them, neither one of them are very broad-minded, broad men. And so, I suppose when you're on the sidelines, if you get emotionally involved, why you take a longer range perspective.
What has been, this is a large question, but what do you think have been the major events in national and world history since the days of the strike?
Well, of course, you have to say the World War, and I would say that the Korean War, well, not Korean as much as the Vietnam War, and those who had tremendous influences. And then I think that the well, you have to say the amalgamation of the labor movement and the Democratic Party. Besides, out of that has grown your all of your social security and all the welfare things. That, and that I think is the dominating factor in our life. Good or for bad, probably would have to say that certainly it's good, but perhaps carried too far, and without good consideration. I remember one time I was in Bellingham at a bar convention. So I didn't have anything to do for the moment, so I went into the resolutions committee this evening. And somebody had a resolution there. Resolving that lawyers should not be placed under Social Security. Really, it's amusing because when I got up and I said, well, I'd like to hear from the proponent of this resolution. I said, who are the opponents? They named these two lawyers, and both of them I knew well. But neither one of them were there. I said, well, there's no one here to speak for it. I'd like to speak against it. And so I got up and told them, in my experience, lawyers needed more than anybody else because they're more profligate than most people. They work hard, live well, and die poor. And they needed, I think, more so than anybody else, which has been proven true, too. So the resolution was beaten up, but so those are those things. I try to keep an open mind as much as I can. But it's interesting. I think that's the big thing, the social revolution in this country, I think, which is tremendous.
What's the most important issue facing the country today?
Well, I'll tell you what I think. I think that inflation is a big issue, and I don't think anybody's going to solve it. That's the worst of it. And so here is policy, life insurance that I bought with great big dollars. Now they're going to pay me off in a little bit of time. And then you take these poor devils to their own pension. I talked to one professor at the university. And he said, well, I thought when I retire, my pension is reasonably good. He said, I'm starting to get pissed. He said, we don't have no provision for any increase. And he said, it's really negative. I can understand it. So it's the way that they steal, and you have to say this, that really, what it is, whether you believe in it or not, it's grade level, is what it is. income tax is a great level. They take it, those who haven't made it, and they fund all these social programs. So, and to a degree, I can understand it, but conceivably they may break it down. Although, from my experience, people in business and that sort of thing, that it's a game, and if they weren't paying paid attention at all, they'd still work at it. Still keep going, and they'd like to go in. So that's about it.
What do you like, I should ask you how much time you have.
Well, I think we have to
try to go through the major things in our country real quick. What's the thing you like most about this country?
Well, I would say this. I think the matter of the individual, the freedom of the individual. By and large, you're not afraid of anyone. Here, I mean, in the sense that political standpoint, particularly, no one is going to individual instances, they will, but you're safe, and you don't feel anybody's going to take reprisals against you for your views. And that, again, is overly simplified, but I think by and large, that's true.
And how about, what do you like least about the country?
Inflation.
A few questions on attitude. Do you think that most people can be trusted, or that you can't be too careful with people?
Oh, I would say that I think most people can be trusted. Yeah, from my experience.
Do you think that most of the time people try to be helpful, or are they mostly just looking after themselves?
No, it's amazing how helpful people are. It makes me ashamed myself. I get a flat tire on the road. Three or four people come along and say, well, here, let me help you. Maybe because of my gray hair, I don't know. But and so many things do that. So now I realize that the common ordinary fellow is, he will look out for his fellow man much more so than I will. And I always think of that when I go into a restaurant. And if it's a working man type of restaurant, they will be more liberal tippers than I will be.
Huh.
Which is an interesting thing to think about. Huh?
So do you think most people would try to take advantage of you if they got the chance, or would they try to be fair?
No, I think it's fair. No, I'm a great believer in that, yes. I'm never suspicious in that
point. Let me just ask you my last question, Doug. You said before you don't think there'd ever be another general strike.
No.
You see no conditions under which that will happen?
No. Not here, no. But, I mean, localized, I would say no.
Do you think that how necessary are employers for running businesses? Could workers run their own businesses without employers?
No.
This is cooperative industries, you know, where they split the profits.